feel like this business, a lot of times I run into folks that are really transactional. But in some regards, like the people that take a step back and slow the pace of it all down, feels like you get way more connected and a lot more opportunities.
I'm Eric Wilson, managing partner of Startup Caucus, an investment fund and incubator for Republican campaign technology. You're listening to the Business of Politics show. On this podcast, we bring you into conversation with the entrepreneurs who build best-in-class political businesses, the funders who provide the capital, and the operatives who put it all together to win campaigns. Today, we're joined by Barrett Davey, co-founder of Surus, a campaign tech data and managed services company based in Illinois. Barrett was also the Republican nominee for Illinois State Senate in 2018. Barrett is the first candidate we've had on the podcast, so you'll get to see things from both sides of the table on this episode. Really excited to have him on today. Barrett, what was the key insight you had as a candidate that led you to start Surus?
So I took a year off my life and ran full time. And so I was really able to see a lot of the ins and outs of how campaigns work and how the different partners or stakeholders that you bring into your campaign integrate with the campaign, and was really able to see the ecosystem, or at least in Illinois, the lack of an ecosystem. And so, what led me to start Surus really was that there was a lot to talk about around the lack of tech and data and a capital market and grassroots organizations and candidate incubation and some of the meat and potatoes of what really needs to get done long term.
This is a story that we hear a lot of times from candidates, particularly like you, who come from a business background. Did that surprise you?
I was recruited. I said, okay, I'm going to do this. I remember saying, all right, there are three things I want to know before I'm going to jump into a state ledge race. What's the win number? How much is it going to cost me to do this? And if I won, would I actually be able to actually accomplish anything, or just beat my head against the wall for 4 years and wonder why the heck I did this? I looked at the state Senate caucus and said, okay, guys, what's my win number? I said, hey, give me 20 years of race history here on general cycle and then midterm cycle races so I can just get a handle for what this looks like. And it took a couple of weeks to get the data. And I thought in my mind, golly, I would be able to get that in 5 minutes by running a query.
Right.
And then you start looking around at the donor history, because there was some donor data available, and you start looking at donor information. And, one of the things I saw was, and this is not too dissimilar from what I've seen in a lot of other states too, now that we've gotten into this, but from 2013 to 2018 in Illinois in particular, 83 cents of every dollar donated came from three human beings. Mm. Whereas from 95 to 2010, longer period of time, but the same 83 cents on the dollar came from about 250 people. And so there's a real decay in the capital market here around donating locally. And a lot of the money was going out of state. And so, now as I sit here today, several years down the road from that experience, a day doesn't go by where I don't have a meeting with someone and say, okay, well, let's look at a 2 mile radius of where we're sitting right now. And I can find five people that wrote $500 checks to Susan Collins in Maine last cycle. But have never written a check ever to, the Republicans of Wheeling Township where they live. Now, maybe they didn't ask for it. Maybe they didn't deserve it. But you start digging into stuff and going, okay, like there's a whole series of things that should be easily obtainable and understandable and then used to help people get out of the blocks faster.
So one thing that jumps out here, right, is people see these problems, right? And you could look at these challenges and elect to go with a more traditional PAC or nonprofit group. Why did you decide to create a business around this effort?
That's a great question, Eric. And I think for us, so my business partner and I, first of all, it's a little bit of, what was our experience? I mean, prior entrepreneur who built and exited a business. I've advised and been on a board, boards of several startup companies. And my partner's spent 20 plus years as a partner at Accenture and KPMG. So kind of doing turnaround work and systems implementations and stuff like that. And so we tend to take more of an entrepreneurial approach to solving problems. And I'd say two big things. One, it felt like there were already some PACs or C4s or organizations out there that were, doing different things in the ecosystem. I've been the chair of the board of two large nonprofits in Illinois over the years. And so have a lot of, I've got a big heart for that. But what I didn't want to do is be in the world of having to consistently be raising money mm-hmm. from donors every year. And I also think like if you, and as you know, I mean, you run Startup Caucus, building a business that actually has to make a dollar, that has to make a profit and be sustainable, means that you have to build products and services that the market is either going to, want to buy or not, right? And you have to see what the market need is. You have to put yourself out there. You have to get as much feedback as you can from the marketplace. You're going to make mistakes. But ultimately, if you start to provide products and services that solve problems, then people will buy them. Now, I'm not suggesting that on the other end of that equation that the capital market is mature enough such that even though you're solving someone's problem and they want to buy your product, that they can afford it. But that's a separate, we can have a longer conversation about that. And we've worked to begin to solve that problem as well in Illinois in particular. But we thought, let's go build a business here. And let's make it so that if the market really demands what we're selling, then this is something that can last. We saw that in order to really take on some of the challenges, most entrepreneurs wouldn't do what we were doing because it would take a long time potentially to actually figure out how to make the business profitable. And you kind of don't know what you're getting into a little bit. And who's going to back that from a venture perspective? I've raised seed and venture and PE money over the years, and you just start having these conversations and people say, hey, that sounds like a mission more than a business. So we went to the market with that kind of pitch and raised a large round of capital from a series of Republican donors and said, look, you're going to invest in a business and our goal is to return your capital. But ultimately, our goal here is to turn Illinois into a red state by 2030 or sooner. And we think the data says that it's possible, even though you're probably going to think we're crazy.
So give us a sense of your progress so far towards that agenda. What are some early wins?
On the electoral side, last cycle, we had some really interesting experiences. We worked initially with a series of state rep campaigns to pilot an initial technology offering that took about five or six different pieces of tech and tied them together. And then slowly over time, as we rolled out that operating system, expanded to some county races and some U.S. congressionals all of a sudden came along. I don't think we were expecting to do that, nor did we necessarily want to jump into that world. We were trying to kind of keep focused locally. And then it led into the state Senate caucus coming on board. And then the most interesting, I think, thing last cycle from an electoral perspective is that we worked with someone who had an idea that we could take down an Illinois Supreme Court justice. I couldn't have told you the names of all the people on the Illinois Supreme Court. I imagine most people can't. And someone with a gentleman here in Illinois who had an idea that there was a vulnerable Supreme Court justice. And
so talk a little bit about those elections just for folks who might not be familiar with the way you do that in Illinois.
Yeah. So in Illinois last cycle in 2020, we picked up two state rep seats. The state house caucus picked up two state rep seats. We actually were both of those state rep candidates were on our platform, which was great. But the big kind of win last cycle was, we have a Supreme Court, an Illinois Supreme Court that has seven justices. It's been controlled by the Democrats since they effectively slated it back in 1964. So the Democrats have controlled the court, it's been 4-3 forever. And in Illinois, until recently, we've had a gentleman named Mike Madigan for 50 years who has controlled the state house and with it also really the state of Illinois. And so he's built a machine, and that machine with trial lawyers and unions has funded the leading justices on the court. And the court is where everything goes to die. So pension reform, term limits, fair maps, all that stuff. And so we had a seat that Trump had really kind of almost had really improved the district. And so we quietly set about building a grassroots infrastructure, people in all the different counties, putting them on a system, getting them the data on who their target should be to raise money and build a field team and communicate to and kind of did a whole bunch of work behind the scenes, raised about $500,000 in seed funding with the partner who had really been the lead on this. And then come September, we helped them raise another $6 million and they ran a great, we're not a media business, so we weren't in the media piece of it, but they ran a great media campaign and we had a great grassroots campaign. And together we took down this guy, Tom Kilbride. And so that opened the court up and led to the Democrats for the first time in the history of the state of Illinois, remapping the Supreme Court districts, because now they're on defense. And the good news is that three of the districts are in Cook County and four of the districts are across the rest of the state. Cook County is where Chicago is. And so they remapped everything. And those two, we have two seats outside of Cook County open, one with an incumbent Republican and one is an open seat, the Kilbride seat. And we think we can win both seats this cycle and take the court for the first time ever, basically, which, you know, again, not sexy. Most people aren't spending any time thinking about it. But if you're in a place like Illinois where
brick by brick, right?
Yeah, it really is brick by brick. And so that was a ton of fun. And we learned a lot. And so that kind of, and it also was a really great win for the large donors who supported that effort for them to see some success, right? And it got people, the other thing that happened in 2020, Ken Griffin was a huge supporter of this, was we defeated the progressive income tax in Illinois. And we, you know, we at Service were not focused on that. But there were some folks that you know, were here locally. And, you know, so there were a couple of good wins last year that kind of woke some people up to the possibilities. And the good news is me think about progressive tax and we'll move on from this topic, but on progressive tax, you were talking about a tax that J.B. Pritzker, our governor, was trying to bring, which would have changed the Constitution in Illinois to now have progressive tax. And it was really a tax on 2% of the population, with the other 98% of the population either seeing no change in taxes or a reduction in taxes. And just under 60% of Illinoisans voted against it. And so there's really great, really great data in there. You know, you really start to dig into that data and it's fertile ground for where there are people that have, you know, some sense of, you know, a more conservative approach. And maybe they haven't been voting that way. I mean, that's another thing about Illinois that's unique probably is we haven't had a progressive problem in Illinois as much as we've had a machine corruption problem. But there's lots of coalitions of voters in the state who, you know, private sector union guys and gals who own boats and guns and go to church on Sunday. Yeah. They've been voting Democrat for a long time, but they do not identify with the National Democrat Party, or Latino voters in the state who vote, you know, 82% Democrat, but are 91% pro-life.
Got it.
You can't turn that around if we're not spending the time, you know, building assets in those communities. So,
right. You're listening to the Business of Politics show. We're chatting with Barrett Davey, the co-founder of Suris, a campaign tech company focused on helping Illinois Republicans. Barrett, I want to shift gears here and get your perspective as a candidate. With Startup Caucus, we work with entrepreneurs who are trying to reach candidates in their campaigns. In terms of the software or the companies that you worked with, what stood out about their pitches that made them particularly effective?
What I saw was that none of the vendors who we ultimately started to talk to, you know, they weren't really focused on the market as much as they were kind of basically browsing the fundraising reports to see who was raising money. And then they were calling to, you know, you posted a good quarter of fundraising and all of a sudden everyone starts calling you.
Right. You got a lot of new friends.
Yeah, right. It's so transactional. And I get it, by the way. I mean, if you have limited resources and you're trying to go to where the fish are, you got to survive and you got to figure out where to, you know, where you can get your business from. I get it. But there's a little bit of like when I raised my first venture round back in kind of 05 with another business that I built, I had a venture investor who said, you know, you kind of as an entrepreneur, you're like a farmer. You know, you're planting seeds for the long term, and you have to do that from day one. But in the meantime, you got to go over to your neighbor's yard, you know, neighbor's farm, and steal some crops so you can eat and survive to harvest your own crops down the road. And so, you know, I never lose sight of the fact that like you got to survive and stay alive in order to be there to, you know, kind of reap the bigger harvest. But I think for us, in my campaign, I was underwhelmed by the kind of investment that was being made by different partners, whether it was a vendor who was selling a service or a vendor selling a product in our ecosystem to try to actually not only earn our business, but to earn maybe the business of others. So that was a learning for me. Like, I think, you know, I think another thing was that obviously when you're getting into something you don't know anything about, and I'd say this is probably a good lesson, if you have startups in this space that are going to be pitching anybody running for, you know, state rep, state senator, county board, you know, down ticket, so to speak, most people are getting into this and they don't know what they don't know. So they're looking for referrals, or they're looking for partners who really take an interest and seem to care about what they're trying to do. And I feel like this business, a lot of times I run into folks that are really transactional in nature. And I get it. Like, we're all busy and we're trying to get stuff done. But in some regards, like, the people that take a step back and slow the pace of it all down, feels like you get way more connected and a lot more opportunities.
That's really helpful to hear, because, you know, one thing that startup founders who have gone through some of our programming before say to the guys and gals who are just starting is that you don't know where those conversations that you have early on are going to lead up, because a couple of things happen. One, in any startup, you've got pivots, right? Where you're going to reassess based on what the market is telling you. And so you don't know when you're going to come back around to that person who may not have been a qualified customer in sort of version one of your company. But by the time you've pivoted to something new, they're right in the sweet spot. So did you invest in them? Did you maintain that relationship? So it's really exciting to hear. I do want to dig in to something that you touched on, which is it is difficult, especially if you're a first-time candidate, it's difficult to know who to trust and whom to listen to. So what are some of the signals that you looked for when evaluating a vendor or tech platform or even just advice?
I ultimately got pitched by some GCs because they saw that we were able to raise some money pretty quickly. I was kind of looking for the quote unquote, I always say, you know, one throat to choke, you know, so I wanted somebody who was going to invest in my race. And I ended up, you know, I found my campaign manager through former Congressman Bob Dold. And I brought someone in full time and paid him accordingly, you know, and said, hey, you're going to work for me for a year. And I'm going to pay you a market rate to do that because I want somebody that I can rely on. Like, I had this experience where I was talking to some large donors and they had people in their orbit who they said, oh, well, you should talk to so-and-so and so-and-so. They gave me a bunch of referrals. And I was, of course, getting a referral from a large donor who has invested in lots of races, I think is, you know, probably a good place to start because they've had a number of experiences with different candidates, and those candidates maybe have given them, you know, their take on the vendor or the consultant. But what I also found in that process, and it did actually pay some dividends. I had some relationships that came from some of these large donors that ended up helping on our campaign in different capacities. But I would say the flip side of that is that you get a little bit of an ecosystem going on, and then because someone's in the ecosystem, everyone, you know, once you're being vouched for, you start to like the due diligence. A lot of people don't do the due diligence that needs to be done, and then you end up getting somebody who keeps getting passed around to other people, and they're not, or something, you know, some piece of tech or some data, because it's kind of like the easy way out to bring, you know, to bring that person in or that solution in. So I think, you know, having referrals from donors was helpful in some cases, but I think
it gave you that little added credibility or social proof, as it were.
Yeah, on both sides, right? Like, if a donor was introducing me to somebody, that person or their company was probably someone that wanted to make sure that they were in good graces. So that was helpful. Like, okay, why should we talk to a state Senate candidate? You know, that doesn't, you know, didn't seem like it, you know, a lot of folks were saying, well, this is going to be a small race and it ended up being a multi-million dollar race. The flip side is that those same people, you know, gives me a belief that, you know, they've been vetted. But I'd say, you know, then and a lot of people probably won't go on and do more vetting, but I'm a big fan of due diligence and getting it done and digging in, because, you know, you hire slow and you fire fast, right? I mean, and that has to do with everything that you bring into your own ecosystem. So it's just the stakes are too high and you put too much effort into it.
Barrett, I want to say thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a great conversation and very helpful to have the unique perspective that you offer, which is as a candidate and an entrepreneur. You really touched on some of the unique aspects that I think face us in this industry, and just really excited to see the work that you're doing in Illinois with an awesome model for building sustainability, getting investment. And so I want to say thank you so much for being on today and best of luck in your work. I'll include a link to Suris in the show notes here. And please, if you're listening to this podcast and it made you smarter or gave you something to think about, please share it with a friend. And you can subscribe to the Business of Politics podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, so that way you'll never miss an episode. And we have conversations like this every single week. We look forward to seeing you next time.